There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Big Question.
It's our Big Question today because we're discussing a book called How to Break Up With Your Phone, The 30-Day Plan to Take Back Your Life by journalist Catherine Price. And joining us for this conversation, we have Rob Sutter, who has been in technology and communications for most of his career. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hi, good morning, Animal. Thanks for having me.
You've worked in offices that didn't allow phones at all, is that right?
That's correct.
But taking that even further, you co-founded and ran a startup called Workphone. So it's very relevant to our conversation. So would you mind, to start with, telling us exactly what Workphone was?
Of course. Workphone was born out of the realization of just exactly how much our phones were tracking us. And what it provided was a way to disconnect your digital identity from your personal identity or your physical identity in real life. So as you moved around or as you participated in events or logged into social media apps, that wasn't necessarily associated with your physical movements on the ground as well.
Is this something that still runs or?
Unfortunately, we shut down Workphone in the middle of last year. I'm certain that some of our competitors are still going on, but Workphone itself is no longer available.
So my first reaction when I saw the title for this book, How to Break Up With Your Phone, was that, number one, no one will break up with their phone. Yes, they're problematic for various reasons, but we can't get rid of them because they're too useful.
Right.
And we utterly depend on them and we must accept that. But there is a kind of subtitle on the back of the book that kind of explains her real agenda. Would mm-hmm. you mind explaining that?
Yeah, of course. And the subtitle that you're referring to is Set Yourself Free from a Life Lived Through a Screen. And a couple of reactions to your point. I don't think we have to depend on them so much, but she also makes the point that we shouldn't throw out the good with the bad.
Yeah.
One easy positive aspect of having these phones with us all the time that we're seeing is the documentation of children's lives and our pets and family time, in particular, just through the camera function. So when you talk about the best camera being the one that you have with you, that's something that smartphones gave us. We can take a picture of something at any time. But at the same time, we find ourselves taking a picture of everything all the time. So she points to the need for a balance, and that begins with an understanding of exactly how we're using our phone.
I like the fact that her approach is it's turning a toxic relationship into a healthier one, basically.
I like where she talks about the tools, so the actual where the phone provides tools that are useful for life, and those are the ones that we want to keep, mm-hmm. maximize, and make sure that we use in an effective way. And then it's working out what of all the other stuff that you have on your phone is actually making life harder,
right.
even though you think it's meant to make life easier, and where the relationships have become, as you say, toxic.
I mean, you know, from having worked in this industry for a while now, I mean, this isn't news that phones have a negative impact on us. But how bad is it?
It's awful, and we've known that it's awful for a long time. And she points out how Steve Jobs, I believe it is, famously wouldn't let his children use any of the iDevices. And many of the CEOs, the further up you go, the more they're limiting screen time. One thing that as I've gone through this industry, I sort of see as my personal ultimate luxury now is one day I hope to be so successful that someone else handles my smartphone for me and I never have to touch it. And that's an interesting perspective from an industry that is trying to keep you on your smartphone all the time. To me, it's very similar to tobacco in the 50s, where we sort of know that it's horrendous for you, but we're hoping that we can stay out in front of the curve long enough to see our own benefits from it. And it's, ethically, it's a really, really difficult position to be in.
It's a classic human long-termism thing, isn't it? It doesn't seem to affect us immediately in the short term, and therefore, hopefully it's going to be okay. But it's probably not.
Yeah. Well, we're already seeing that it's not. And she points early in the book to, since 2007, when the first iPhone was introduced, and we've seen such penetration of smartphones, suicide rates and rates of depression amongst teens in particular have spiked. And I don't remember the exact reference, but they did go through the research where it's not just correlated. It's a causal relationship. So as you see increasing usage of smartphones, increasing penetration, you see that increasing mental illness. And that's devastating to a society. It's something that we need to be really focused on and something that we need to understand.
And it's so tied up in all the other aspects of what a phone does to you. I thought what I found particularly interesting is the research that she's done or noted on how phones affect your ability to concentrate and to focus and to do deep reading. And I think this all ties in, you know, if you're in a constant state of constant distraction and need to be fulfilled through your phone, that it affects how you work and behave, and also, of course, affects your mental health. So
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? No, I'm kidding. Because you're exactly right. It is exactly what it does to us. This idea that we can do everything all the time concurrently really keeps us from doing one thing well. And I see this across the board with companies that we work with. Strategy is disappearing in favor of distraction. I mean, people are beginning to make business decisions that favor distraction, despite mounds of evidence that focus is what you need. And focus is where we become excellent. So it's not only affecting us on an individual level. It's affecting the way that we participate in activities outside of ourselves or in a community.
I thought the whole attention span thing was really interesting in particular. So the titles of the chapters, just to go through a couple of them. So she starts by, the part one is the wake up. So she talks about how our phones are designed to addict us, tricks of the trade, why social media sucks, the truth about multitasking, what we were just talking about there. And initially when I picked up this book, I was reminded of a book that we reviewed a couple of months ago called Addicted by Irresistible by Adam Alter, which is all very much about how the digital addiction is exactly the same as the effect that, say, a slot machine has on you, the kind of risk and reward system and the way that that works. What I liked about this was that it's quite a short little book, and it moves on fairly quickly from that. It establishes that quite quickly, and it goes more into practically in your day-to-day life, there are things that you're doing that you might not be aware of that are making this relationship even more toxic. So if you take us through some of that, that might be helpful.
Right. And even worse, it's designed to hide those behaviors from you so that you don't notice that you're doing things that increase the toxic nature of the relationship with your phone. And it is a relationship, and it's important to start from there. It's a one-sided relationship. You feel things for this device, and of course it doesn't feel anything for you. It's only there to manipulate your behavior toward it. The first part of that, I think, that I would refer back to is her pointing to how they're designed to do this. And there's a tremendous amount of engineering that goes into this. You brought up the slot machine from the last book, but it's also her preferred example in this book, where it's intermittent reward behavior that encourages you to increase the frequency of attempts to gain the reward.
Rewards, so like notifications from, say, various social media applications. So right. You have a message or update.
And beyond that, she goes into the neurology of it, where specifically dopamine is the hit that you get from getting the notification. Someone liked your post, someone sent you a message, someone's thinking about you. It's ultimately hijacking a positive emotional response in order to keep you seeking that behavior. And in that sense, it is very much a classical addiction. And a lot of the treatment, if you will, that we come back to during the breakup phase could be applied to other types of addiction as well, even though she does give specific recommendations for the smartphone.
I thought about a few people in my life who specifically don't actually use social media on their phone. Are they still at risk of having a toxic relationship?
I'm one of those people, and I will tell you absolutely. One of the things that surprised me was early in the book, she gives a smartphone compulsion exam. It's very short, 15 questions. And as someone who has been intensely aware of all of this and who has taken active steps to keep all of this stuff out of his life, I still scored up in the sort of the middle of the compulsive behavior. Was surprising to me. I would have thought that being aware of all of this, I would still be beyond it, but no, I'm not. So even those people who don't use social media on their phones, that's not the only form of distraction. It just may be one of the most malicious forms of distraction.
I think when I'm looking at those questions just now, I mean, it says, do you find yourself spending more time texting, tweeting, or emailing as opposed to talking to people in person? And a lot of the questions are about social media as well, but questions like, do you sleep with your mobile or smartphone under your pillow or next to your bed regularly? She makes this is one of the big things that she says, the simple changes that you can make is just buy an alarm clock.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have in our house, my wife and I, we use an alarm clock. We do a generally good job of making the bedroom a no phone zone, as she recommends later. Occasionally there are things that come up where, you know, there may be an emergency or something, but it's the exception, not the rule now. And it is a very basic step. I think we paid like 15 euros for our alarm clock at the time. It's not something, it's much less of an investment than a smartphone, that's to be sure.
We're going to go through some of the specific practical tips that she gives you when we come back, when we have a little bit more time. But one of the things that I did want us to address was the book is marketed as, so how to break up with your phone. It's a 30-day detox plan. Mm-hmm. Is it a gimmick or do you think that it is genuinely the right amount of time that you need?
I am not a specialist on addiction. I know when I quit smoking, it took me a lot longer than 30 days. Even if it's a gimmick, if it raises awareness, then I support it. And I'm starting tomorrow, actually going to walk through it myself. I didn't have time to do the program that she recommends before the show today, but I am going to begin it to see how it is. So I'll let you know my thoughts on it after.
Did you feel as you were reading this, Flora, that you needed to make some changes?
Yes, I did. I read it yesterday and I found, first of all, stuff that I knew, but I hadn't really thought about. I mean, I remember reading an article about how notifications change from being blue, which is a nice kind of calm color, to red to switch on our reflexes, our fight or flight reflexes, so that you would always want to look at them and find out what they are. And even the basic tips, like just switch off notifications. You're going to check your emails anyway. You don't actually need to know that some have come in. I found quite useful. So I'm keen to do this. I'm thinking about asking my mum if she'll do it with me over the summer, because I love the idea that you need to do it with somebody else. And I'll be traveling home and seeing my family. And I think it could be quite an interesting experiment.
I found that even if you disable notifications, you're in the back of your mind, you're still wanting to go in and check.
And that is the problem, isn't it? That's the behavior that we've all developed, that we didn't need to know these in the past.
Right.
You could let things lie until you went into the office the next day. I mean, I still remember before email really came in as the major thing within companies. And life was a lot more straightforward and a bit less stressful.
This is kind of I've only got about a minute to bring this up, but my issue with that, though, especially with email, is that in certain jobs you are made to feel, and often it is a requirement of what you do, that you be available 24/7. Mm-hmm. Does she say anything about that in the book?
Sometimes there is. What happens if you're not? It depends, I guess, on the job.
Yeah.
But this is hopefully the start of changing awareness across the board.
She doesn't mention 24/7. She does mention the Daimler policy in Germany, where when you go out of office on a holiday, they delete your emails and send an autoresponder saying, if you need this issue, contact this person. This email has been deleted and will not get a response. And that's something that I've done as well. And it certainly enrages people the first time they get it. But eventually they go, actually, you helped me solve my problem anyway, so I don't care if it's you or someone else who solves the problem.
That's actually really interesting. There was an article about this recently, and the comments were completely divided. People thought that this woman was, one, being rude, or that she had every right to do this. What do you think about this? Do you think that if you're going away on holiday, your out-of-office reply can say, sorry, if you send me an email, I won't respond because I'm on holiday, but you can contact this person instead, and I won't see your email when you get back because it's going to be deleted. What do you think to that? 4001.
The big question.
How to break up with our phones clearly being the big question today. And it's not just a question we're asking today. We've been asking it since the connection between phones and other forms of addiction were first established, and we'll continue to be having it until we find some form of a balanced relationship with our devices. We are here with Rob Sutter, whose career in technology spans how many years?
Well, for money, since 1995, however many that is.
Okay.
I'm too distracted to do math anymore. Blame the phone.
Funny. How to break up with your phone. How does Catherine actually say we can make this happen?
Right. She gives a concrete plan with concrete steps over 30 days that she's broken down into four parts. The first is technology triage. And I think of this as the analysis phase. It's when you determine actually how much am I using my phone. And for most people, I think it's going to be shocking. She recommends several specific steps, like installing apps that track it for you, or just focusing on the actual use and also focusing on yourself. Thinking, as we were discussing during the break, what do I want to get out of my phone? Mm. If I own my phone and it's a tool for me, what application do I have for it that I want to use, rather than why am I becoming a tool of it? The second phase is about changing your habits. And this is where I said that a lot of this is relevant for multiple types of addiction, not just smartphone behavior, but it's sort of the preparation for the difficult phase of reclaiming your brain that comes after. Changing your habits involves more involves more restrictive apps on your phone that sort of they're enforcers or assist you in making those changes as you go through the preparatory phase. And then the third phase is almost not related to your smartphone at all. It's what I would call mindfulness or awareness. She says very early on in the book, we experience what we pay attention to. And in this phase, we change to pay attention to the things that we value over our smartphone and to control where we place that attention. And then her fourth phase, she just calls your new relationship. And that's more maintenance. It's ongoing. How do we cement these positive habits that we've created?
I think the important point that she makes across the whole book is that it's not about taking anything away from you. It's about giving you back your life.
Right.
And we were talking before about email, and that you have the email response whereby if you're on vacation, you don't say, I'll get back to you. I'll reply to your email when I'm back. You say that I won't see this email when I'm back?
I have, and it depends on what company I'm in and what level I'm at the time. Okay. Sometimes you don't have that luxury. When I was running my own company, that was my response, was I'm unavailable. This person handles these issues. This person handles these issues. I'll get briefed on everything that happens when I get back. I'm not going to read this email. So if you think I must read it and no one else, please send it after the 14th of July when I'll be in the office.
A lot of people think that that is fair, and a lot of people think that that is rude. And this came up in an article I read recently, and it was interesting to see how people responded. And some people were really angry that how dare you say that you're not going to immediately respond to me when you get back from your holiday. But the whole point of a holiday is obviously to decompress. And so when you get back to an inbox that is even bigger than your daily one, you've kind of defeated the whole purpose of going off grid in the first place.
Well, and ostensibly, the whole reason that person sent you an email in the first place was because he or she had a problem that needed solving. And so if you've provided the tools to solve that problem in your absence, then you're still helping that person, whether it's by auto-forwarding or just giving them the additional contact information.
You mentioned one of the steps that she suggests is to use enforcer apps.
Mm-hmm.
What precisely did you mean by that?
These are like, a lot of them are designed for parents to limit screen time for their children.
Okay.
But they can also work for adults who need to be kept out of Instagram or various other toxic applications. They track the amount of time that you spend in an application or on a specific website, but then they go beyond that and they limit it within a period that you define for yourself. And she makes the point regularly in the book as well that there's nothing wrong with distraction. There's nothing wrong with mindless distraction. There's nothing wrong with playing Candy Crush Saga. It's when you say, okay, I'm going to be distracted during this time. I need to unwind. I'm going to do this, and you do it in the time period rather than reflexively reaching for Candy Crush every time that you don't have something going on. And it, in a large sense, it's about learning to be okay with that lack of stimulation and accepting it.
What did you take away from it, Flora? What practical tips and tricks are you going to walk out of the door and start using?
Well, this morning I didn't pick my phone up for a good hour after I got up. And then when I did, it was to check whether you'd texted me about the show this morning, because that was crucial and important. And to text one thing from my son staying with a friend, and I just wanted to be sure there was nothing coming in on that. And then I didn't scroll through the news, and I didn't scroll through Facebook, because I thought, okay, I can see why, and I actually feel better for it. Yeah. So I'm thinking that it's the vortex that the phone creates. So you go in and you say, I'm just going to check the headlines, and then I'll just look my email, and there's nothing in my email, so let me just see if something's on Facebook. Oh yeah, that wasn't very interesting. And 2 hours later you look up and you go, oh, I could have read a book in that time. You know, there's so many more productive things that we can do with our time. But I agree that sometimes it is lovely for just a bit of mindless distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And that we shouldn't lose that. But the tool, we have to control the phones instead of the phones controlling us.
Right.
Well, she mentions that there are certain things that, like, there are good apps or good uses for a phone that we absolutely depend on and we shouldn't stop depending on. And mm-hmm. then there are the things that we should cut out of our phones and out of our lives. What are the things that are keepers?
Right. So this is, again, Flora, you referred to tools early on in the broadcast, and that's the category that she says. If you have a Nest thermostat, well, you need an app to use it, so you need to keep that on your phone. You'll return to that whenever you want it. For a lot of people, Careem or Uber would be tools, right? You're not going to go into Careem looking for a dopamine fix. You're going to go in there because you need to get from point A to point B and nothing else. I mean, has anyone ever checked their Careem app at 9 o'clock at night just to see what's going on in there, right? In the app industry, we talk about toothbrushes and tourniquets. And toothbrushes are, I think, the more devious ones. They're the ones that you want people in every day. You pick it up every morning. And I think that's exactly the type of app you should be avoiding. Tourniquets, on the other hand, are these tools where nothing else will do. If you're in a situation where you need to navigate, then almost 100% of the time now, you will need Google Maps on your phone. Yes, there are alternatives, but let's be honest about what people use. Those kinds of tools that don't have the notification aspect to them, that don't have the FOMO aspect to them that she talks about, those are in her first category of things that are okay to keep on your phone.
And she advises how to put things into folders so you don't see them all the time. Mm-hmm. About turning off notifications, how to do it, you know, mm-hmm. and which are the useful apps to track. And I'm just going back to the book itself. I like the way she writes. I like her style and the humor in it and the fact that she acknowledges the irony in using an app to help you stop using apps. Right. I really like the way she writes.
Yeah. And there's a point where she waxes hopeful about our ability to get off of our cell phones entirely. And then she ends that chapter with the sentence, but the cynic in me expects that somebody's just going to write an app for that.
Yes.
I think I love the basis of this whole book, and I do think that it's something that everybody needs to do, and it helps you do this and accomplish this individually, how to break up with your phone, or at least develop a healthier relationship. And there's already stuff that I'm seeing that I can go away immediately when I leave the studio and start fixing to kind of make my relationship a bit healthier. But I think there are certain things like email. Email's a big one for me, where I think that unless there is a change higher up across organizations, which I think is becoming more of a possibility and being talked about more, books like this help us do that. It's not just going to be down to individuals. It needs a big societal shift for some changes like that to actually.
I agree, but I think what individuals can do is think, it's 9 o'clock, I don't need to check my email. Because what can I possibly do between now and 8 o'clock tomorrow morning?
Well, one of the things that she recommends is getting a landline. And I think one thing is good about that. Listen, I will not check emails when I leave the office. I don't have Slack on my phone. I don't have email on my phone, right? So if you need me, in my case, it's a mobile. But when you take that further step of going to a landline, call me at home knowing that you might be waking up my children and interrupting my dinner. If your need doesn't meet that threshold or you're uncomfortable doing that, then it's not an emergency. If it's an emergency, you'll call me at 2 o'clock in the morning, wake up all of us, and we'll deal with it. But that should be the threshold. Otherwise, it's too easy. And I think a lot of us apply internal pressure on ourselves where our bosses are working at 10 o'clock at night. They send an email and they don't necessarily expect a response then.
We have about 1 minute left. So before we wrap up, what's kind of the... your general consensus on How to Break Up with Your Phone by Catherine Price. How does it compare to maybe other books that you've read on the subject? And would you recommend it?
I would recommend it wholeheartedly. It's much easier to get through and it touches on broader areas as well. Sort of like your general online hygiene relating to your privacy. It's a very good starting point. And I strongly encourage listeners not to skip the first half of the book and just get going with the program. The theory should scare you into wanting to apply the program more accurately or more actively.
If you are interested in the theory behind the toxic relationship between devices and us, then I'd recommend Irresistible by Adam Alter. That is a brilliant book. And if you're interested in focus and getting off of multitasking absolutely everything and being distracted, Deep Work, I think, is the name of the book, or that is the focus of the book. I can't remember it now, which makes me feel really stupid. What were you going to say?
Oh, a recommendation of my own. She mentions The Shallows, How the Internet is Changing Our Brains and the Way We Think by Nicholas Carr. And I would also recommend that as well for really understanding the neurological concepts behind the damage that our smartphones are doing to us.
Thank you, Rob Sutter, for joining us in the studio. It's been an absolute pleasure. We were talking about How to Break Up with Your Phone by Catherine Price there.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.